Hey, good people. This is Omi Sade Bernie Scott from the Black Girl's Guide to Surviving Menopause. Do you remember the first time you watched Roots? I do. I was blown away by the story, blown away by the acting, LeVar Burton and John Amos and Leslie Uggams and Cicely Tyson. It was just the most profound experience I had to date as a young Black girl, watching a story that documented a multi-generational journey from Africa to the United States. And it stuck with me. And even when I watch it now as an adult, I get emotional when I think about that. I feel that way about Sounder. I feel that way about Cornbread Early Me. I feel that way about Cooley High. There are just certain movies that stick with you and they become a part of your own journey, your own story. They impact how you see yourself and how you move in the world. I feel that way about music as well. And I feel that way about books. Last year, I was encouraged to watch a show that was being newly released called Lovecraft Country. And I was like, what is this show? And folk were like, it's kind of a mashup of Black horror, speculative fiction, and sci-fi. I was like, ah, okay. Speculative fiction and sci-fi, I do. Horror, not so much, though I am reimagining and reclaiming my relationship to horror and Black horror. Shout out to Tanan and Reeve Du and the work that you do to remind us that Black horror is canonical, a part of the Black experience and our relation to it. So I watched it. I watched every single episode. I made ritual out of watching every single episode. And the one episode that I keep returning to is the I Am episode, episode 7. And that is the episode when Hippolyta Freeman goes on an interdimensional journey, a journey of reclamation, a journey of pleasure, a journey of rage, a journey of claiming herself. And it was so beautifully performed and held by award-winning actress Anjanou Ellis. And it was written by show writer Shannon Houston and the executive producer and show writer Misha Green. Phenomenal. Fantastic. So I talked about this all the time. Everybody knows how I was feeling about it. It's been an ongoing conversation. So when my good friend, Lana Garland, who was interviewed for the podcast in season one, who is also a filmmaker and is the fantastic curator and director of the Haiti Heritage Film Festival, reached out to me last year to say, hey, Omi, what do you think about the Black Girl's Guide to Surviving Menopause? Interviewing Shannon Houston and Anjanou Ellis from Lovecraft Country. It felt like a thunderclap. It felt like I was going to get to have a conversation with folk who don't know me, but I felt like do know me by way of this story, by way of this performance. So what we are about to listen to right now is what? A bonus track right in time for my birthday. I am turning 54 on April the 18th. Shout out to all my Aries. Nothing could be better than to release this conversation between three Black women. It's an intergenerational conversation where we explore pleasure, shame, identity, courage, choice, reclamation, rebirthing. It is such a fantastic conversation. I'm really honored to have held that space, and I'm excited to share it with you. So sit back and relax and get ready for this fantastic conversation. Thank you, Lana Garland. This is the Black Girl's Guide to Surviving Menopause, and we are so excited to release to you today a bonus episode of our interview and moderated panel with Lovecraft Country's Shannon Houston and Anjanou Ellis. Good afternoon, good people. My name is Omi Sade Bernie Scott. I am the creator and curator of the Black Girl's Guide to Surviving Menopause. The Black Girl's Guide to Surviving Menopause is a multimedia project that centers the voices and first-person narratives of Black women, femmes, and non-binary people as they navigate
Menopause and Aging, and I have the good fortune to be the host for this fantastic panel discussion this afternoon with Lovecraft Country show writer Shannon Houston and the award-winning actress Anjanou Ellis, who plays Hippolyta Freeman in Lovecraft Country. Before we get started, I wanted to say that this is the 2021 Haytai Heritage Film Festival. I hope that folk have been enjoying themselves thus far. We're really excited about this conversation this afternoon. If you are a low vision or limited vision person, I wanted to describe myself before we got started. I'm a Black woman with medium brown skin. I have silver, kind of grayish hair, gray-white hair. I am in my home in North Carolina. Behind me is a yellow wall with terracotta accents and a tree of life tapestry. So welcome to this conversation. And let's get started. So, hey, Shannon. Hey, Anjanou. How are y'all doing? I'm so excited to be having this conversation with you both. Thank you so much for agreeing to be a part of the festival and to have this conversation with me. You know, the theme for the festival is the hero's journey. And today we find ourselves in the resurrection portion of the journey, which seems really appropriate, right? So this is perfect timing for this conversation for folk to tune in. We also find ourselves sandwiched between Black History Month and Women's History Month. So I want to give us, all the three of us, an opportunity to invite any ancestors into this space that we might want to be a part of this conversation before we do introductions. So I would like to invite my mother, Mary Burney, into this space for this conversation. I'd like to invite my great-grandmother, Louisa Malu Young. And I also would like to invite Toni Cade Bambara into this conversation. So those are the three ancestors I would like to invite. And I'm going to punt it to Shannon and then to Anjanou.
Thank you. I will invite my mother, Gloria Waite, into the conversation. I will invite her sister, my Aunt Grace, Grace Waite Jones, into the conversation too. Thank
you. First of all, what Amashade didn't say in her description is that she has the most banging glasses that you ever want to see. They're green and every color of the sea, of the Mediterranean Sea.
Yes.
And she's fabulous.
Thank you.
And yes, we had to say that. Okay. And I am a brown-skinned woman. I have a yellow shirt on and I am in Mississippi. And I have sort of, I don't know what color this lipstick is on. It's like maybe pink, maybe something else. I don't know what color it is. So use your imagination. And I would like to invite my recent ancestor, my mother, Jacqueline Taylor, my grandmother, Myrtis Taylor, and Fannie Lou Hamer.
Ashe. We got some good people sitting in this space with us, y'all. All three of us got our mamas in this space. This is going to be a good conversation. I could tell that right now. So instead of reading your amazing bios, and I sent this to y'all ahead of time, so I hope we're ready for this different kind of introduction. We're going to try it. It's going to be okay. I'm right here with you. We're going to rock it out. We are going to use an introduction from a community-based organization here in North Carolina that's a Black women-led org that I'm a part of called Spirit House. We're going to use something called Where I'm From. So each of you have an opportunity to say where you're from based on who claims you. So that could be your ancestors, your family, your culture, the region. Who do you claim? Same thing. And then what generation you're from. And that could be marked by music or style or current events or TV shows. Like I always think about the Jackson 5 on Saturday mornings when I was growing up, because that's what we would be listening to in the background where we were cleaning the house. So that way we could watch Soul Train without being interrupted. That's the generation that I come from. So I'm gonna kick it back to Anjanou and then to Shannon for you to introduce yourself of where you are from. And then we're gonna jump into this juicy conversation.
What was that cheer? Hi, my name is Andrea, and let you introduce yourself. Introduce yourself. Who do I claim and what claims me? That's such a great question. I am a Mississippian. I am a Southerner. I am from Southwest Mississippi that borders on the line of Louisiana. So, you know, when we root for football teams, we root for the New Orleans Saints. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good a measure of that, indicator of that. And who do I, who claims me? I hope the same people. Mm-hmm. I pray that I'd like to think of myself as a daughter of Mississippi, as a daughter of the South. I would identify myself with 90s New York because I spent, mm-hmm. I was in New York in the time of Puffy and Mary J when all that stuff was in, yeah. Biggie, when all that stuff was going down. You know, we thought the world would never change. It was all gold and fabulous. And yes. So, yeah, that's I think that's my little decade.
I love that. And, you know, another late happy birthday to Mary J. Blige, who just joined the 50 plus crew. We want to welcome her to the water. The water is fine. Come on in, Murray. How about you, Shannon?
Well, I claim a few places. I'm from Boston originally, but also lived in North Carolina and Cleveland, where my mother is from and her family is from. And so I would say I grew up in all of those places and New York. My adoptive mother is part Jamaican, and so I claim that too. And my biological mother is part Cape Verdean, so I claim that too. And what was the other question?
Who claimed you and who do you claim? I think you just kind of did.
Yeah.
And then what generation?
Oh, yes. I'll say late 90s, DMX era, early aughts, Crazy in Love, Beyonce. I think my generation.
Okay. All right. Good deal. So thank you. Y'all did great. Y'all did fine. So when I first saw the promo for Lovecraft Country, I was like, ooh, what is this? Like, the promo was just fantastic. And I didn't know what to expect. Of course, you know, when you see it, I was drawn to it. And, you know, I like sci-fi. I like speculative fiction. I like some fantasy, some dark fantasy. But I have to admit to you both that I am traumatized by horror. Because I graduated from high school in 1985, so a lot of my experiences with horror were just like slasher films, things like that. There, you know, a couple things I don't do with horror. I don't do supernatural stuff, and I don't do demon children. But I managed to stay in the game with Lovecraft Country. And so what I did is I created for myself a ritual. I literally would watch it in the middle of the day after it would air. And then I would listen to Shannon and Ashley Ford on the podcast. And I felt like that was kind of like scrubbing my brain of any like terroristic thoughts I had. I also have been working on my relationship with horror. And I feel like Tanan and Reeve Du is like a horror doula for me. She's like inviting me to reimagine my relationship to horror, especially Black horror. So I feel like I think I did pretty good, but I think there might be some people, I don't know who they might be, who don't know about this show. So I just wanna take a second to describe the show and y'all let me know if I get this right, okay? So Lovecraft Country, the show, is based on a book by the same name by an author named Matt Ruff. The book is considered dark fantasy. Lovecraft is derived from an early 20th century writer named H.P. Lovecraft, who was a self-proclaimed white supremacist and racist. It takes place during the summer of 1955 in Chicago. Atticus, nicknamed Tick, played by Jonathan Majors, Hubba Hubba, is returning home from Korea because his daddy done gone missing. And he's also like on this Iliad Odyssey kind of quest to reclaim his birthright, which is like magic that's embedded in his DNA. And that's what the storyline is. But it is the storyline of Hippolyta Freeman. Ooh, honey. And that I Am episode that knocked my socks off. That was the episode that me and so many of my friends have talked about online, FaceTime, on Zoom, social media. It has just gone back and forth and back and forth. So did I do a good description? Okay. Well, I'm pretty good about that. So
wonderful.
Thank you. So I'm going to kick us off with the first question. Can you both kind of talk to us about why you feel like, one, Lovecraft Country was so relevant for us in this season that we found ourselves in 2020, in particular Hippolyta's journey with I Am. And I'm really interested in y'all's thoughts around the dynamics around power, choice, and rage, because that came through so beautifully in this episode. And so we could do rock, paper, scissors, or I could kick it to Shannon and then to Anjanue. I think I'll do that. So Shannon, you want to start us off?
Sure. You know, I think one thing we were trying to do was make sure that we were telling a story that would speak to people of a lot of different generations. And there is something that's a little or very disappointing that, you know, we can tell a story about a Black woman who is seeking more, and that so many people across generational lines can identify with that, but that was what we were trying to do. And I think 2020 was a great year to explore rage. Mm-hmm. I think for Black people, it was a year to explore and accept rage as a valid feeling. And I think for Black women and Black femmes, it's always going to be something that we are left out of, you know, like who has a right to those feelings? Who has a right to say that they want to kill somebody? Who has a right to say that they want to hit the road and leave their family behind and go on an epic adventure? Mm-hmm. And so I think that we were, you know, definitely trying to claim that for Black women and Black femmes. And 2020 was, we didn't know that, we didn't know what 2020 was going to be like, what the world was going to look like when the show came out. But I think that we did always know that no matter what was going on, some of those themes were just always going to be relevant. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Anjanue, you wanna chime in?
The ideas of rage, particularly, I think that I'm excited. I feel affirmed. I feel liberated that now Black women are self-proclaiming and reclaiming the right to rage. And then beyond that, laying waste to this idea that it is inappropriate to be angry. It is not helpful to be angry. Forget rage, just to be angry. So particularly when I did that speech, Hippolyta does the speech to her sister warriors, and she says particularly that sentence, we are told not to behave this way because it's not ladylike. So what's contained in that is not just a scream, a yell, a holler, even better, towards patriarchy in this country and white supremacy, but also how those things are articulated within our communities. Mm-hmm. And that, for me personally, is a conversation that we have not had in the way that I think that we really need to have. When we start having these conversations, we will begin to discuss how in these movements like the Black Liberation Army, how they were characterized by abuse, Black women being abused, by their comrades. We will have conversations about the civil rights movement and how the March on Washington and Black women, they organized the whole thing and yet they didn't get to say anything. So for me, this was exciting because these are things that I have that have been churning in me. I have been writing about on my own in different ways. So to come to work and to say those words that Shannon and Misha wrote felt like a marriage of my mind, my heart, and my profession. Mm-hmm. And I cannot tell you how fulfilling that was and is.
There was a part in the scene when Hippolyta is talking to Josephine Baker, and she talks about being furious. And I had to stop watching because I burst into tears. I was like, ooh, I know that feeling that she is expressing right there in that moment of the setup. It feels like a setup. I also feel like we see a lot of the genius in Hippolyta and Dee and her baby, the entire show. Yes. There's so much Black genius in both of them, and they are both being consistently invisibilized by the people around them. So Shannon, I would really love to hear from you, like as you and Misha were writing this episode, what was coming up for you as you were like pressing into flesh this resurrection, this rebirth, this phoenix moment for Hippolyta?
I think it was a lot of what Anjanou was just talking about. Like, sadly, we all have these personal experiences where we're like, I just want to kill somebody. And we're not allowed to say it, and we're not allowed to talk about it, and we're not really even allowed to feel it, and we push back so much. So I think in the writer's room, it was a great opportunity for everybody to talk about, for the Black women to talk about the things that they were angry about, the shrinking that they had done, for everybody to talk about the shrinking that they had seen their mothers have to do, their grandmothers, their aunts, their sisters. I think all of us identified in some way with this conversation about a person who knows that there's something wrong and that there is something better out there, but she doesn't know where it is and she doesn't know how to get to it. And she can't even hardly get out of the house to get to it. And I think for creative people in general, we all kind of identify with the idea of like, I feel like the world is bigger. I feel like there are stories out there that I want to tell, but the day-to-day responsibilities, and this is obviously especially true for mothers, the day-to-day responsibilities make it literally impossible for me to have these adventures and do these things. So I think as a group, we were like, what would somebody like Hippolyta be feeling during this time? And how can we talk about how it's true for a lot of people today, especially women, especially mothers, especially Black women mothers? So it was definitely therapeutic. And I think for me, I love anger and rage so much because I presented as such a good kid and I was very angry. And anybody who's been in foster care is probably really angry about that. And I think that I saw this as an opportunity to also kind of tap into those things of like, I'm not okay with that. I'm not okay with what happened to my family. I'm not okay with what happened to my mother. I'm not okay with losing my mother. I'm angry about that still. You know, and that's not even getting to the stuff about race and sexism, like just anger, 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 and having a space to put that onto a page and then watching somebody like Anjanou then take it into the multiverse is empowering.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that what resonates with me is like folk being able to bear witness to this story was a nod and an affirmation that whatever ways that we are experiencing rage and anger, especially as people who are Black women or women identified or femmes, like you should tap into, lean into it. I'm reading the book, Love and Rage, and it talks about our ability as Black folk to really access the trauma we've experienced in this country and that rage and let that be instructive how we heal from that and move from that. So I'm appreciative of both of y'all's reflections on that. I want to take another deeper dive into a part of Hippolyta's interdimensional journey when she gets to choose to go to another earth dimension and reconnect with George. And she and George get to have like a real talk conversation. Like she chooses, she's like, I'm Hippolyta, I'm George's wife. And she gets to lay out on the table, there's some things that were just not cool with our relationship, man. And he hesitated at first, and then he received it. And then he followed her lead as the discoverer. Another moment that I had to turn off my TV and say, well, what do we have here? This radical honesty conversation between her and her husband around shrinking. And so I would love for you both to talk a little bit about how you see the relationship and how it's played out, not just with Hippolyta, but I think also with Ruby and Letty around shrinking and shame and guilt. Parts of that absolutely lived really, really deeply in this episode, but it's not a theme that I didn't see just be like a through line being pulled throughout all of these strong characters and their own shadow work that they needed to do. So I'll kick it back to Anjanou around this shrinking conversation that she got to have with George as Hippolyta.
What I grew up with is what I know. What I witnessed in my grandmother is what I know. What I witnessed in my mother is what I know. That is my core knowledge of what it is to be a woman, what it is to be a Black woman. Sure, I've encountered and experienced and know other manifestations of Black womanhood, but in terms of what I know, what I rise to in the morning, what I go to bed with at night, it's that knowledge. It's where that knowledge comes from. And what is loomed through that knowledge is caregiving. I spent my childhood in the backseat of my grandmother's car, visiting the sick and shut in.
Come on.
That's what she did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We visited the sick and shut in.
Yes.
So we would come to church on Sunday morning, and there would be a portion in the service where we would pray for the sick and shut in, right? But my grandmother went and visited the sick and shut in. Her prayer was not just in her words, but was in her act of being a woman. And so I think about this idea of being a caregiver as essential in this idea, all these ideas that you talked about shrinking, about shame, about guilt. And I think that is what Black women carry more than anybody in the world. And I think particularly Black women in America, women who have survived the Middle Passage, we carry that more than anybody in the world. And this is not to shrink anybody else's experience anywhere else, certainly not at all. We carry that so strongly. And so all of this, the burden of guilt, the burden of shame, when we feel like we are not pressing into what we know about ourselves, we're not pressing into who we are, which are caregivers. Because even if you are not taking care of a child, I feel that Black women feel that they have to take care of a community. They feel that they have to take care of a culture. The Black Lives Matter movement is built on women, whether they had children or not. They believed it was their responsibility to take care of Black people, caregivers. And I feel that Black women carry that more than anybody. My mother said to me one time, so that was my grandmother's experience of visiting the sick and shut in. My mother said to me one time, she said, Anjanou, my generation of women had to turn away from my mother's generation. And so what she meant by that is my grandmother, her birthright was caregiving and visiting the sick and shut in, being the good wife of the pastor, because that's what my grandmother was. She was the first lady of the church. She was the first lady of four different churches. So this is who she was. My mother insisted that her life would not follow in that direction. So my mother was like Asada Shakur. My mother was like Angela Davis. And these are women, particularly Asada Shakur's journey, is a woman who we could say had her Hippolyta journey and is still living her Hippolyta journey because she left her child. She left her child and is still not with her child. So at some point, she made the decision that Hippolyta didn't make, which was to return to her child. So I'm not going to go any further, but I'm putting that out there of these sort of questions that we have that to me, for me, go back to and always land again and again and again as Black women, as caregivers.
Absolutely. Shannon, before you kick in, I just wanted to say, Anjanou, this really resonated with me. My mother was born in 1930. And so I had older parents, and we would do that every Sunday when we were growing up. We would go see my folk, you know, and so you drive around in the community and you'd either pull into the driveway and talk to people from your car, you know, depending on the relationship. I'm gonna talk to you from the car, or I might make my way to the porch and sit a spell on the porch because the spell for 15 minutes to an hour. If you're real close, you're gonna come inside the house and you're gonna sit in the front room, AKA the living room, right? And they're gonna talk to my mama, and me and my sister are just sitting there ear hustling the whole conversation. And then they also are, you know, remarking on how big we've gotten as the girls. Because I have a sister who's 14 months younger than me, with the girls. And I love that. And I actually still do that. I have found a way to replicate that even during the pandemic, to go see my folk, drop off groceries, and then run out to the curb and text, and then just stand out there, you know, with my hand on my hip and be like, well, I just wanted to lay my eyes on. So it's packed inside of my DNA. That part is. But what I'm trying to work my way out of is some of that shrinking part that I also inherited that I know is not useful and is not a part of my evolutionary destiny this lifetime. That's not my journey. And so I just wanted to build off of that. Shannon, I know you got something to say about this shrinking and guilt and shame piece. I unpack it.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Hippolyta and George, what was so great about that scene and what was tough about writing it is that George always presented as this incredible husband, an incredible family man, and this pillar of his community. And he was all of those things. And that doesn't mean that he always did right by his family. That doesn't mean that he didn't take advantage of the benefits of being a man in the household. And what was so hard for Hippolyta, which is what's so hard for so many of us, is to ask for more, to say, I have a lot to be thankful for. I feel blessed, but this wasn't enough. And after this journey she goes on, she can look back at the relationship and say, we had a closeness. You saw things in me. That's how we fell in love. But you knew I was shrinking. And of course he has to deny it at first because it's a big accusation. Because he's a good person, he sits with it and he takes it in. But I think that question of I can't possibly ask for more is definitely circling around many of the characters in our series. They're all in some way saying something ain't right, I need more. Something's not real, I need it to be realer. I'm a little bit free, I need to get more free. How am I going to go about that? And I think what we're trying to get at is to inspire Black people and especially Black women to have the audacity to say, I don't care. You know, I don't care how good you were to me. Something was wrong, you know, or I don't care about all the things that I had. It wasn't enough. I needed more, you know. So redefining. That's what I love about that Josephine Baker scene where she's like, I didn't even know what I was missing. I didn't even know that there was a freedom like this. So now I'm really angry. I think the shrinking conversation is about looking at yourself and looking at your relationships and asking yourself, am I safe in this relationship? Am I really getting to be my most authentic self? Or are there parts of myself that I have to hide a little bit for this to work? And if that's true, and if there are things I'm hiding, what is this? What does this look like? And so, yeah, it's exciting to watch that shift in their partnership as she takes his hand and he follows behind her. I think that the goal there is just to get people to think like that and to get people to think a lot bigger about what's possible for yourself and what's possible for your relationships.
Before we go on, I wanted to piggyback on that a little bit and say, go a step further. I think so much about the Hippolyta journey is so metaphorical to the Black woman experience. So her saying to George is, for me, is definitely about a conversation between a woman and a man saying, I wanted more in this relationship. I know what it's like to be in relationships and have to hide yourself because you don't want to offend the fragile ego of the male. So I know that. I've lived that life. But it's also about, for me, the larger question of how much space Black women are allowed to take in the world, period. Not just how much space we have been given, you know, allotted in this relationship, in this sexist, but he's a good guy, but still sexist relationship, but also how much space or do we allow ourselves? And then also looking and always have to do this, be vigilant about situations where we are denied space. We are denied space as Black women. We are denied space culturally. We are denied space politically. And then we have to monitor and be very aware when the act of denying that space is intentional, because it happens all of the time. I see it in so many situations where if we are laughing too loud, it's really like that kind of stuff, right? If we laugh too loud, you know, if we sing too loud, if we dancing in places that we shouldn't dance, things like that, how we have to shrink ourselves, ocean that we are as Black women, that every day we got to fit into somebody's lake. So I just wanted to say that.
It's the audacity of it all, isn't it? It's the audacity of it all. I mean, to fit our ocean into a lake and spill out
every day.
We can't be contained in the lake. So we spill out despite ourselves, whatever messages we've received from society. It's like, this is how you fit into this nice little space. And you're like, okay, that's what I need to do to be accepted. That's what I need to do to be safe. That's what I need to do to be successful. And despite whatever programming, there are those of us who find ourselves spilling out at the edges anyway. Mm-hmm. And those of us who do it deliberately, which this is where we're going with this, like the deliberateness and the audaciousness of like, I actually know that I'm an ocean and not a lake. And therefore, I don't buy it anymore. So I'm going to do whatever work I got to do to unlearn this. And I think this is why Hippolyta's story resonated with so many of me and my peers. I'll be 54 in April. And so much of what I have been talking about with my friends since we turned 50 is not buying it anymore. Mm-hmm. It's up. The jig is up. Mm-hmm. It was a fool's errand to begin with. We're going to do this, whatever unlearning that is necessary to take our proper place and that space be very big and unapologetic. And that doesn't mean that you're running roughshod over people. But what I'm not going to do, what I'm not going to encourage my sisters to do or other Black women or femmes to do, is to stay in that space that you've been handed that was a false narrative to begin with. So I love that. I also am curious about, because it's a period piece, because this is situated in the 50s, did that play a role in the shrinking? Did that come to mind for you as you were writing it, Shannon, with you and Misha, and also Anjanou as you were playing it? And has that given you new perspective on your grandmothers or your mothers or your aunties who had to make decisions that really were also based on the generation that they found themselves living in.
Yes. When I think about my mother and I think about her mother and I think about my other mother and her mother, we're all a product of our environment. We're all a product of our time. But the exciting thing is there's a shift with every new generation, right? There should be. There's a shift with people saying, this is how our mothers did it. We don't have to do it like that anymore. This is how our mothers survived. We don't have to survive like that anymore. And in fact, we don't, I think now a lot of us are saying we don't just want to survive. That's not enough. So, and that doesn't, I think there's a way to do that without disrespecting that generation. Meaning when we were writing the early episodes with Hippolyta, you wanted her to be bigger, right? Like she's tearing off those pages in episode 3. And it took a while for us to construct that scene because we had to think about somebody like Hippolyta who feels very angry right now, but who has not been through the multiverse yet and who knows that she has to present herself a certain way when she goes out to breakfast. What does somebody like that do with all that anger? What is a very personal thing that she would do so that she can still present the correct way when she leaves that room, but behind closed doors, she's the same Hippolyta who's going to go through the multiverse and fight Confederate soldiers. So you can honor that. You can say, I honor that woman behind that closed door because Diana saw something in that woman and Diana drew those comics because she knew about that woman. And so you can honor those people and say, you know, thank you for that. And now I'm going to take that and I'm going to take it to the next level, whatever that is. So yeah, I think I definitely felt like I had an understanding of women in a different way because it is, I think we do run the risk sometimes of saying, well, I don't want to be like that. And that was terrible. And I'm not going to shrink myself. And it's also like, it's different when you become a mom. Like once you become a mom too, at least for me, a lot of other things that didn't make sense as far as shrinking and guilt and responsibility.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anjanou, do you feel like there were parts of that period piece that just absolutely helped you have a deeper understanding of your mom's journey or your grandmother's journey?
I wouldn't say that it helped me to have a better understanding of their journey because I came in with an understanding of their journey. You know, I came in with that understanding. I mean, the beauty of this, of playing Hippolyta and being a part of this bold, beautiful thing that is Lovecraft Country is that I got to bring my full self to work every day. I didn't have to leave anything at the house. So I came in with my grandmama and my mama in my Marc Jacobs bag. You know, I came in there with it, you know?
Yes.
So it wasn't really a discovery of it, but it was a marriage of it that I could pull from as I played it.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I'm going to shift gears a teeny bit because I want to talk about you all. You, not necessarily the show, about you. So I'd be remiss if I didn't acknowledge in this moment that we are living just a mere week out, if that much. It's been a little over a week since Queen Mother Cicely Tyson made her transition to the realm of the ancestors and purchased her book for my sister and I. We're reading it together. We just started reading it. And in the moments after I got the news, I was talking to my cousin. I said, do you realize that Cicely Tyson played Rebecca in Sounder when she was 48 years old? And she was 53 when she starred in Roots. I am 53. And it just really kind of made me think about the assumptions I make around aging and what is available to you creatively, how you access your creative energy, how you create access the places of your creative edges that you haven't even experienced yet. And the assumption that is a young person's game, whatever your creative output is, whether it's acting or writing or poetry or digital media, or I don't care what it is, if it's just for yourself, but that's not true. And so I'm wondering for you both, how you are experiencing your creative identity shifting, shape-shifting and changing at the intersection of getting older and what that looks like for you. What do you feel like is accessible to you that wasn't accessible to you when you were younger? And what do you still feel like is emergent for you? What's still something that you want to learn or do?
Since I'm older than Shannon, I think I'm going to go. Well, because you might not be thinking in this way as much as I am. For me, I am starting to commence a part of my life, start something in my life that I had only imagined and dreamed of for years and years and years, which is writing and getting checks from it. So in this phase, I am saying to myself all of this stuff that I'm sure someone younger like Shannon has been in communication with herself for years. And I've just started in the last couple of years. Yesterday, I sent something to a friend of mine to read, and they came back with some stuff that made me so mad that I couldn't function for the rest of the day. Feelings were so hurt. And then I started thinking about all the writers I know in my life who I have given holy hell to. You know what I'm saying? And I was like, oh, this is what it's like. This hurts. This does not feel good at all. And sort of having to tell myself, say these things to myself, like, well, maybe this is not what you're supposed to do. Maybe you're not as good as you think you are. All of that stuff. So what I'm saying is I'm in the process of that. I'm in the process of being 50, 51 and saying I'm doing something that I've never done before and saying I got to learn how to deal with getting harsh criticism. I have to learn how to deal with someone reading something that I wrote and saying, no, I ain't feeling it, yo. This is what I'm dealing with. This is what I'm dealing with now. And I have not been in this space for the entirety of my life. I was in the seventh grade and wrote something. And my seventh grade English teacher, this racist, just used her red pen to like do designs on my paper. And it hurt me so badly that it took me probably 20 plus years to try to write anything and give it to somebody else. And I did it because I had a family member who was, I didn't know it at the time, but about to leave in a few years. And so I needed an outlet for that. I needed to be able to talk about that. So I just started writing. And I started sharing it because it's the difference between writing, you can journal or whatever, but giving it to someone to read, I hadn't done that. And it wasn't that I wanted anything published. I just needed witnesses to what I was feeling. So that journey, that experience sort of bled into what I'm doing right now. And where this is going to end up, I don't know. My aging thing is I'm doing something completely new, completely different, and I'm learning how to deal with it every day. I don't know if that was long-winded answer for your question. No, sorry.
It does. I'm very excited for you. It is more than a notion to give yourself an opportunity to take that risk. And then be like, well, hold up now.
Yeah.
The risks that we take in our 50s feel like you got the perspective of like what the cost could be potentially if things go awry. And so yeah. I know me personally, some of the creative risks I have taken over the last 3 years have been in that space of just like, I'm going to take this risk and then what's going to happen? What's going to happen? And to have a good circle of people around me to be like, nothing, you're going to learn. No one's going to be harmed if you take the risk. And you're like, are you sure? Are you sure? Do you promise? What about you now, Shannon? I don't, you know, we didn't do our ages, you know, did the rundown of the age. You know, I know that you are a mom because you talk about it on the podcast and that you're raising these amazing, beautiful babies. And, you know, I also low-key stalk you on social media. So I've seen pictures of these beautiful children that you are raising up to be free and liberated and full of themselves and confident. But I also think that this is an intergenerational thing. And if I could go back and have conversations with my 20-year-old self, 30-year-old self, maybe even my 40-year-old self, I'd be like, don't you set yourself up for the okie doke and limiting what's possible for you, no matter how old you get.
Yeah. Yes. I think it's interesting and a little bit terrifying that I'm 35 and I have friends my age who we shrink ourselves. We do all of the things. We count ourselves out. I think the last few years of my career have made it hard for me to do that. And I mean it sincerely. When I was on the set of Lovecraft Country and I was watching episode 7 rehearsals and episode 7 get shot, I literally made a vow to myself when I left. I was like, no more. You know, I just was bearing witness to the most incredible thing and the most incredible artists. And to think that I had any role in that and to think that I would come to the set still being like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm here. I was just like, we're done with this. We are now Hippolyta, name yourself and stop doing this. And what I find is happening with my friends when we talk a lot of the time is we talk about our teenage years and our early 20s as like that very special time where nobody could tell us anything, where we knew like the confidence that I had in my pinky when I was 17, 18, 19, I'm trying to get back to that. And then I'm trying to go beyond that. But it's like, there is definitely something that happens to you over time. And I had my kids youngish. I had all three of them by the time I was 28 and I had just finished college when I was 25. And so I do think that even though I'm 35, like a lot of the drama of my mid 20s and straddling everything that I had going on just aged me up slightly. And not in a bad way either, you know, like just the way life does sometimes. And so I think even in your 30s, you need that lesson. You need somebody telling you that it's not too late because we still use that language. I know so many people, and I'm a part of that too, who use that language of, well, I can't do this now. Well, I can't go back. Well, I can't try something new and start over. That's crazy. Especially if you have children, it feels even crazier. And it's just such a dangerous way to think and such a limiting way to think. And we don't even know we're doing it half of the time. So I think that writing the episode with Misha and with the writers and experiencing this series has definitely served as a constant reminder that there is no limit, right? Like just keep naming yourself. And as crazy as it sounds, you might end up on stage in Paris with Josephine Baker. So give it a shot.
So give it a shot because you never know because the multiverse is real.
It is.
It is a real thing. Well, I'm going to round us out. I know that we could continue to have so much more conversation, but I have just one more question for you both. I want to appreciate you both for this conversation. This has been exactly what I thought it was going to be, which is juicy and good. I don't know if either one of you have read Adrienne Marie Brown's Pleasure Activism, but it's, you know, a couple of books that are in my house that I just keep returning to over these past couple of years. Emergent Strategies is one of her books that I read a lot and got to participate in one of her trainings and consider her movement family, but also Pleasure Activism. And in Pleasure Activism, Adrienne talks about the politics of feeling good. She says that pleasure activism is the work we do to reclaim our whole, happy, and satisfiable selves. That's my favorite part of that, our satisfiable selves from the impacts and delusions and limitations of oppression and or supremacy. So we see Hippolyta engaged in what appears to me a pleasure activism practice. She is just like zooming through the multiverse. And I think she's experiencing pleasure, of course, in Paris with Josephine Baker. I also think she's experiencing pleasure in Dahomey in Benin with her Amazonian sisters when she is kicking Confederate tail. I see the pleasure in that, right? When she says, we are the girls who know when to create and to destroy. I said, well, That sounds like pleasure to me. And then, of course, the whole full circle of the Arithia Blue Galactic Discoverer and her partner, George, coming with her, but following her lead in this discovery place. So my question to you, this is the last question, is do you have a pleasure practice? And we tend to think of pleasure often associated with sexual pleasure. Of course, that's it. But there are also other things that bring me, adornment brings me pleasure. This is why I dressed up for y'all today, because I've been in the house for a year and nobody gets to see me outside. So I was like, I'm gonna dress up for Shannon and Anjanou. I'm gonna put my big earrings on, my lipstick and my cobalt blue. Adornment brings me pleasure with my little Leo rising, Leo moon self. So I'd like to hear from either one of you, both of you actually, around any pleasure practice that you have. And that'll end us out today, because you deserve a pleasure practice.
Shannon, you want to go or you want me to go?
I have my list. I have to dance every day. I have to move my body in some way. I have to put on some kind of music and dance. And these are things that I learned. I was reading Pleasure Activism over the summer. A friend recommended it to me. And that's when I learned, I was like, I have to do these things. I can't put them as like, oh, on the weekend, if I have time, I'll put on some music and dance. No, I have to do it every day. I have to cook, which is very funny because I invited my Aunt Grace into this conversation earlier and she could not get me in the kitchen when I was 15 or 18 or 20. I resisted it for a really long time for whatever reason. And I'm totally different now, totally different relationship with cooking and food. And so I have to cook. It doesn't have to be every day. It doesn't have to be elaborate, but I have to make things in the kitchen and literally will now like take pictures of them. I have a whole photo album that's just for me of my food. I have a cousin who's a really good cook. She lives in Texas and I'll send her pictures of them sometimes. So much pleasure. So those things, when I was reading the book, Adrian recommended physical pleasure often and regularly. And I practiced that over the summer. Yes. And it was a wonderful practice. And I'm continuing my journey in that practice. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, film and TV, I have certain movies that I just go back to and that I just put on and they make me feel good. So those are all a part of my pleasure tools. Mm-hmm.
You got any pleasure practices, Anjanou?
My pleasure practice is coloring with my niece. She is it when I as soon as I walk in the door, she's like, "Hey, Auntie, here are your colors. This is your page. This is my page." And I was with her all weekend and I was sitting there with her and doing this. And I was thinking to myself, this is so much fun to me. Like, am I crazy? Because I'm getting the most joy sitting here with this 8-year-old girl picking which colors of, you want pink? Oh, let's do green. You know, just happy doing that. And I think the extension of that is really just, it's just my family is my pleasure activism. And time that I spend with them, eating, watching movies, coloring, it's my greatest joy. My greatest joy. And riding in my new car, listening to my playlist that my friend Ty Ford made for me.
Oh, yay. All right. Yes. Well, this has been one of the best conversations. I really appreciate you both for making time, taking time, spending time to be a part of the Haiti Heritage Film Festival and to have this conversation with me. And I really hope that folks who tuned in and enjoyed this, I know I did. And I also hope that you both continue to keep yourself safe and be as big as you want to be and as happy as you want to be and keep creating. And I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this bonus episode. It was so good. Oh my goodness. I'm really honored that I was able to hold space and moderate this panel. And I was really honored that as three women who invited our mothers, who are ancestors, to be in this space with us, we got a chance to have a really earnest conversation. And I hope you can feel that energy. There was so much respect, authenticity, and vulnerability in that. And I'm grateful. Thank you so much, Anjanou. Thank you so much, Shannon. Thank you so much, Lana. And thank you, listeners, for always returning to this podcast and helping us as we are committed to normalizing the journey around menopause and aging for Black women, Black femmes, and Black non-binary people. You can learn more about the Black Girls Guide by checking out our website. I have dropped our information in the notes. And if you would like to support the work of the Black Girls Guide to Surviving Menopause, you can do that by making a one-time donation. I will put our Cash App and Venmo in the episode notes, or you can consider becoming a Patreon sustainer. And you can find out more about how to do that by checking out our website. Thanks again for supporting us. Thank you again for the affirmations. We want to hear from you. So don't forget to send us your listener letters. You can send listener letters to Decolonizing the Crone. That's all one word, decolonizingthecrone@gmail.com, and put listener letter in the subject line. We want to hear from you. What do you think about the podcast? What stories would you like for us to bring to the podcast? What questions do you have? We do want to hear from you, and we appreciate all the information and affirmation we receive from folk when they do contact us. Thank you so, so much. And we will see you again soon on the dark side of the moon.